You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Jane Fine. Jane, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for talking to me.
Jane, let's talk about what you're working on now. What's happening in your studio at the moment?
Well, I've had a really terrific, productive summer. I was at McDowell Colony for the month of June, and I was at another shorter residency at the end of August. So mostly I have a studio full of work, a lot of which is unfinished, and I've spent really the last week or so staring at everything, trying to make sense of it all together. The time at McDowell was really interesting because it was, well, to back up, I've been working on for about 2 years a lot of things with quite a bit of political content, and when I got to McDowell, it's such a tremendously joyful place, and all the work was so completely happy, especially for the first week or so I was there, and it was interesting to try to make sense of what I was feeling in this remarkably privileged existence and how I might tie that back to some of the kind of darker doom and gloom.
Right. Let's talk about that a little bit, because that's yeah. So interesting, right? McDowell is this amazing residency, this legendary residency. So
yeah.
So you're saying you're there. I mean, we can talk about the residency itself and what happened, but you're saying in the first week or two, because of the residency itself, there was a struggle with the content in your work and how you were approaching it?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, there were times at meals when I said to other artists, you know, everybody was so happy. The weather was gorgeous. I mean, everything you possibly can need is being done for you. And I asked other people, what does it feel like to be, you know, in one way, being in such a joyful state of mind, and yet, of course, we're all thinking about Trump and the world and climate change and all the disasters of the summer. I decided to just go with this joyful feeling, and I thought, well, after a while, I will probably find my way back to kind of more political content, and I started to think after a bit, you know, what's maybe the most interesting is the kind of contrast that when you're in such a beautiful place and so relaxed and at peace that. The contrast is what becomes incredibly interesting. And so I started to bring that into the work as much as I could. I mean, there's paintings that in some ways are nocturnes with, you know, I'm looking at trees and hillsides and sun rays, and yet there's something unsettling, I think, in all of them. There's imagery that's dripping or collapsing or being patched over. So ultimately, that contrast is something that's been interesting to me for decades and decades, and I think it just took me a while to find it when I was there.
That's so interesting. So let's talk a little bit more about the residency, and now you're back. And you said there was another residency in between, right, between McDowell?
Yeah,
and now?
So I went, I don't know if you know this, but I also make collaborative work with my husband, who's painter, James Esber, and we have a side project, a collaborative drawing project that we call J-Fiber. It's a ridiculously transparent pseudonym, and it's all work on paper, and we had been very involved with that work it's from 2008 to 2011, and it's been somewhat on hiatus, but we were invited to residencies called DNA Residency that Nick Lawrence runs in Provincetown. And we decided, since he invited both of us, we thought we would just work on those pieces up there for 2 weeks, which is just delightful. But, James's work, I mean, what's really interesting about working with him is that I come out of abstraction and move towards figuration in my work. There's always little bits of signs and symbols, flowers and guns and flags, and, you know, drawn in a very simplistic, almost girlish way. And James comes out of figuration and kind of drifts toward abstraction. But when we do the collaborative works, we kind of keep the gulf between our tendencies wider in order to make the contrast.
Let's talk about that a little bit. That's such an interesting process of collaboration. I mean, there's the first residency, and then this one, which is the two of you and James Esper working together on these.
Yeah.
And these what are really kind of elaborate pieces. How to talk about that process a little bit? How do you guys work together? I imagine it's side by side. You take turns at it. Is there a plan?
You know, with something. I mean, we've been together over 30 years, and in the first 20 or so, we tried a few times to make collaborative works, and I think our egos were were too strong to let our guard down, and it was always a failure. And then we got into it in 2008, and it was just a very emotional time. My mom had just passed away, and we just decided, I think we were able to be kind of emotionally more open to it. And we did it with almost no discussion or dialogue. I started some pieces, he started some pieces, we would pass them back and forth, usually twice, and we would call it the simple A-B-A-B, whoever started it would then have the third go, and the person in the second go would do the fourth, and there was almost no conversation.
But that is a conversation. There was no conversation between you two, but visually, it's each of you reacting to the latest.
Yes.
Absolutely,
and we got really interested in kind of irritating each other in a way, like trying to set up, you know, rather than doing the thing that you might normally do in your own work to start a piece, trying to do something that seemed almost impossible and say, here, you know, you spouse, figure out this crazy thing. And it ended up, I think, influencing both of our work a lot, because we were just being kind of, you know, gambling and being reckless. And it was really exciting. This time, I let James talk me into this idea that we should just focus on heads, which I was a little reluctant to do, because it's what he's been doing in his work for the last year or two. But it was really interesting. It was heads in the absolutely loosest sense. So it was good. And so basically now the studio is, you know, the studio is too small, and I'm looking at piles of these just wild, surreal heads from Provincetown. I'm looking at these half sublime, half gloom and doom landscapes, and then I'm looking at a bunch of the work I did between my show a year ago and McDowell, which was still kind of dealing with a lot of imagery that referenced contemporary political scandal. So there's a few hidden swastikas, and there's loads of dollar signs and drooping flags and things that kind of vaguely reference the Statue of Liberty. So it's all here, and I need to, as soon as I finish writing my Guggenheim application, kind of go step by step and finish things up and resist starting anything new for a while.
And let me ask you one more thing about this, about your collaboration, because that's so interesting, the process you're talking about, not only of initially ego, right? This is what prevents a lot of artists from collaborating, especially couples, is ego, of course. But the most recent work also seems to be about the longevity and evolution of your relationship, right? This is because you're together, you know, I mean, all these issues, it's a certain place of I don't want to say it's just about ego, but it's also about permission or something else, right? It's some kind of very
well. It's funny, like
place,
you know, some
collaboration.
Yeah, sometimes it feels like it's our, you know, marriage therapy, like all the things we somehow maybe don't talk about verbally, like come out in the collaborations. You know, we'll argue and in a. You know, I guess we'll argue through the work. And one thing I started thinking about a lot that I thought was so interesting is in a lot of the collaborations, like the boundary between him and me is always different, right? You know, there's work where one of us did the right half and one did the left half, and there's work where it's almost a little more like an exquisite corpse, like just like sedimentary layers, you know, one on top of the other. And there's ones where it's very so much merged together, you can hardly tell the edge. And I thought that was such an interesting metaphor for relationships in a way, or long-term relationships, like how you interact and how you set boundaries and how you collaborate in the other sense of collaborate, how you collaborate in the marriage. So that whole idea of edge has become fascinating to me.
Well, that is fascinating because it's also about how you resolve things as a couple in nonverbal ways, right? Most couples don't have that. It maybe therapy is kind of something like that, but not really, because it's verbal and
No, it's the healthy way, where as opposed to like raising our child, we just yell at each other.
Right. So like, what's happening with those works? Are those works going to be shown anywhere, the ones from the residency, or what happens to those next?
Well, I hope so. We had a bunch of shows of the collaborative work in sort of 2008 to 2010. And, we're really, I mean, Pierogi technically represents all three of us, so to speak, me, him, and us. I don't know. We decided we're just going to get a studio full of this collaborative work and invite a bunch of people over. So anybody's hearing your radio show and wants to show them.
Okay. We'll put that into the text of the interview. Absolutely. And to come back to your work, so you're back in the city. You've been in these kind of wonderful residencies now.
Yeah.
As you were saying before, it's also time for the threads of your work to come together in some way, right? Because there's a number of different things there. And it's interesting that we're talking about Provincetown and McDowell and everything, because now you're, the space where you're in also really affects the work. Right?
Well, it does. For me, it does very, very much, because, I'm an artist who doesn't really, I don't work from observation. I don't work from direct source material. So the things that drive the work are a mix of where I'm physically located, what's going on emotionally and psychologically in my life, and what's going on, in the outside world, politically and culturally. But I get very affected by where I am, which is part of why I love residencies. I feel like I just thrive in the new, when I'm in a different landscape, literally, it very much affects the pictorial space in the work. I don't think the paintings I'm looking at right now, I don't think I could possibly have made them in New York City. I mean, other artists could have, but I don't know, my mind doesn't work that way.
But how does New York City affect the pictorial space, really? I mean, how does that happen? Because, New York City is also so much about the limit of space. That's also affecting your pictorial sensibility.
Now I'd say more recently, I probably ignore it a little bit. I think when I was a younger artist, so I'd say, now it's more about leaving the city really affects the work. I think when I was younger, it was very much affected, like the way that my paintings can be, and more so decades ago, were just very congested visually. It was really affected by the city. There's so much going on and a kind of lack of a deeper pictorial space. Now I think, I hadn't really thought about it, yes, but I think, yeah, it's now for me, it's about going away. I guess when I come here, I think of New York as a little more neutral for me now. I mean, maybe that's not completely true, but.
So is there another residency coming up? Is there another dream residency on the horizon?
Well, nothing is as dreamy as McDowell, because there, every possible need an artist can have is just met. But both James and I just got a call the other day from a residency we've been to before called the Hermitage, which is another gorgeous, gorgeous place. It's on Manasota Key on the Gulf Coast of Florida. And they just said they had some openings, so they were inviting alumni to just come back, you know, first come, first serve. So actually I'll be
people,
there for
the because you've been the, you've been in that residency before.
Yeah. They're also invite only. So I think they just, whatever, the fall wasn't filled up. So we both jumped on it, and I'm going for a week in December, which I'm really looking forward to. And, well, there's one other really interesting thing that's kind of going on in my thought process that you'd probably be intrigued by. So a year and a half ago, this is a long story, but I'll make it very short. About a year and a half ago, I found out kind of after doing a DNA test on a whim, I found out that the man that raised me was not my biological father, which is a story that's been, you know, exceptionally popular, I guess, in the last couple of years. But it's been so interesting. I've been thinking about it a lot again in the last couple of days as I've been writing this Guggenheim application essay, because I thought last year I was thinking so much about how to use this as subject matter, and all three of my parents are long deceased, and so I've been thinking a lot about the lies I was told and why I was told these lies. And of course, all of this is happening at a time when, you know, we're listening to Trump's lies and Trump sex scandals and all the, you know, when I found out was probably the height of Me Too movement. And so there were some direct references in the show of my work a year ago. There was some use of the word mom and dad, and secrets were kind of hidden in a few paintings. But more recently, I've been thinking that in some way, this subject matter has been in my work my whole life, and I haven't quite realized it. I've been reading a lot and listening to a lot of podcasts by people with similar kind of stories, and I've been thinking a lot about this idea of what it means to grow up with a secret that you never quite know. And many people have asked each other, like, in some way, did you always know? And I'm starting to feel that there's this theme that's always been in the work, which is this kind of joyful exuberance that never quite feels right, that in some way is masking or camouflaging something that's a little bit off. And I mean, of course, I'll never, you know, I don't know, maybe short of some kind of hypnosis, I'll never exactly know what I knew or what I felt as a 5, 6, 7-year-old. But it's in the last month or two especially, it's really been this new lens that I've been looking at the work through, and trying to decide, you know, in what way the story is going to be the new subject matter, or in what way the story has always been the subject matter. I think that makes sense.
That does make sense. It's fascinating,
yeah,
too, because of course there's that very strange terrain of what did we know when we were five that we only learned non-verbally, you know, there is this enormous amount of information you're taking in about all the relationships and nuances around you that, I guess, impossible to decode in some ways, but it's all in you, as you're saying. It's still all there, right?
Yeah.
Fascinating. So that continues to be a part of the work that's coming out now.
Yeah, very much, very much. And we'll see where. I mean, I think there's something in me for kind of the next body of work about how to take something that I think has been kind of background subject matter for decades and kind of put it right out front. But I don't know that I've exactly figured it out yet. So stay tuned for that.
Thanks. Yeah, we'll stay tuned, keep posted, and thank you for sharing that. That's powerful, of course. And as you're saying there, it's not an experience without DNA testing then there's so many variations of that it's allowing us to see, which is fascinating on a on a number of levels.
Well, it changes. You know, the thing is that it's such a cultural change because it's like, you know, in my parents' generation, so many people went to their grave with secrets, and you can't take those secrets with you anymore. Like, you know, you know, we're in a culture now where, I mean, I feel sorry for people who are maybe middle-aged who have been trying to hide something and realize their health is good, they better out with the truth.
Right. So, yeah, that's true.
But it's fascinating. I mean, the other thing that's fascinating is to try to decide how to live with the mystery of it all. You know, there's so many things. I know a lot, and, you know, there's a sour version of my story, but there's, you know, a lot I don't know, and just accepting all the things that I will never know. Like, anybody who knew is long dead, and it's so emotionally complicated, and I just think I'm really lucky to be an artist or some kind of creative person, because I know there are a lot of people dealing with these kind of stories right now who don't have any outlet other than, you know, drinking or whatever.
Right. So what are you reading at the moment? I want to ask you that one more question. What are you reading?
I'm reading about 5 different things. So just on that topic, I just finished this book called Inheritance, which is about 6 different people recommended to me. It's by someone named Danny Shapiro, who had a very similar story to mine. And it came out just a few months ago. So I just finished that. And then I'm reading Sapiens by, what's his name? But I think it's a book.
Sapiens, the history. Israeli history professor, yeah.
Yeah, that's been really good. Usually I read a lot of fiction, but I don't know, I'm just on a little nonfiction break.
But Jane, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you well with the next work you're involved with.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure here, too.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.